Good evening and welcome to another episode of In the Crease Avalanche Review. I am Scott Cole, your host, here with Mike Herschel.
How's it going, everybody?
And our special guest, Dan Slate from Colorado Avalanche Society. How you doing, Dan?
Hello, everybody, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. This is our first episode since the hockey season has started. So we're going to go ahead and dive right in. I know a lot of Avalanche fans are unhappy with the way Game 1 turned out on Wednesday night as we opened up in the newly renamed Ball Arena with the brand new uniforms, which I personally like. The blue pants, gloves, and helmet. I think it looks pretty spiffy.
Yeah, those colors really mesh well, don't they? They look really good, man.
So,
yeah, I'll tell you what, it looks slick. That blue really pops, and I love it.
I think it plays on the eyes a little bit more for a lot of people, and I think that's why a small percentage of Avs fans don't like it, because it's harder for them to track a player or whatever. The black, black's a little dead when you compare it to the ice, but that blue does pop off the ice a little bit more. As far as the game goes, Avalanche came out pretty hot and heavy and put up the first goal of the game. Andrei Burakovsky with a pretty nice wrist shot from what I saw in that first game. As we all know, though, the Avalanche fell short in that game 4-1, and immediately I saw reports of fans blaming Philip Grubauer for this for the loss.
Could they be any more wrong, man?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, that is definitely, if anything, Grubauer kept that game within reach for them. That was all them. That was all defense, offense, not Grubauer's fault whatsoever.
Yeah, Bednar came out of the gates early with an alternate lineup, trying to put Brandon Saad up there on that top line with Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen. And I, maybe the chemistry's not quite there yet. I don't, or it just didn't gel well. But I don't think it was necessarily the offense's fault that game. I don't think that the Avalanche could stop themselves, from tripping over themselves, so to speak. Out of the four goals that the Avalanche gave up, I think only the third goal or the fourth goal was really Grubauer's fault. He goes back behind the net to try to push the puck around. So that his players can get to it, and I don't think he got enough of it, or he just whiffed on it, and he didn't get back into his own net in time, and before he knew it, Sundqvist put another puck in the net.
Yeah, unfortunate. Stuff happens, though. Obviously, as we saw Friday, people were able to bounce back, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we definitely bounced back with some serious style. We were looking like we had never, that we had just got done having some serious time off with, and the Blues came to play. So we, kind of a good wake up call. Sometimes you got to lose to get humbled a little bit. Be like, all right, we've got a lot of hype around us. Okay, game one's over. Game two, let's go in there and let's show them who the Colorado Avalanche really are. A fast, quick, skilled team. Let's just dominate them, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, the Friday night game was a big change on it. But you touched on another subject, Dan, is a lot of us are seeing this as the Colorado Avalanche's year to win the Stanley Cup. They've got all the pieces. They've got four solid lines that can score at any time. You've got grit on every single line, and we saw that in droves on Friday night with the Calvert line, that fourth line, just kind of dominating. Some of the play, just rushing here and rushing there and just really putting pressure on the St. Louis Blues. But something you touched on, Dan, was Avalanche being favored to win the Stanley Cup. 11 of 14 NHL.com writers have selected the Colorado Avalanche as hoisting the cup at the end of the season. The really interesting thing for me there is we could play any single one of the division winners in the conference finals or in the Stanley Cup. It's all based on who has the best overall record, based, when it comes to who wins those divisions. So, I mean, we could play somebody from Canada. We could play somebody from the Eastern Division or the Southern Division, you know, in any at any one of those points in the semifinals or the finals. So,
yeah, and I might just be a cakewalk for the Avs because we definitely don't have any trouble now getting into the playoffs. It's more of sticking in the playoffs. You know, we can get through round one, but we have to get through round two. And Joe Sakic going out and adding a Devon Toews, who had a very nice night last night.
Yep, last night had a goal and an assist last
Brandon
night.
Brandon Saad, you know, he's kind of, Brandon Saad, I would say, is probably still trying to get and mesh with all the guys. I'd say he's still got the new vibe going. So I think once he kind of gains that chemistry with his line mates, mainly Kadri, I think, is who he'll have the most chemistry with.
Yeah, but, Big Hirsch was giving me a thumbs up on that point with Brandon Saad.
Yeah, definitely.
You were saying before we hopped on, it might be, Mike, you were saying it was for Brandon Saad, it might just be a change in philosophy that he's maybe struggling a bit with.
It seems a little bit. Specifically, just because Brandon Saad, if you look at the Chicago Blackhawks organization and how they were able to do the stuff that they did in years past up to leading up to probably year, we'll say 2018, 2019, just the fact that, you know, he's not used to the style of play, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, we had mentioned briefly that he's not used to playing on a fast team. He's used to playing on a finesse team where you got Toews, you got Kaner, you got Seabrook, you know, you had Johnelson back in the 2015 series. You know, you had that team that's able to push pucks in kind of like a fancy way, whereas the Avalanche's philosophy is speed kills. We know this. We've seen all the players burst up the ice. And, I mean, how many guys do we have, rather, that can go blue line to blue line and... like a snap of the fingers, man. Yeah. So,
and we saw that speed on display last night with Nathan McKinnon's goal late there in the third as he split the D, for his breakaway goal.
There, my dad. Machine coming through.
Oh yeah, yeah. There was no stopping him right there. It definitely made a difference. Back to game one. You know, losing 4-1. Dan, you touched on it. I think that was probably a wake-up call for the Avalanche as far as, not playing those difficult mistakes. And I've looked at it as if you look at this division, St. Louis is one of those teams that's favored to win one of the four spots for the Stanley Cup playoffs out of the West Division. You know, one of the other teams in that position is the Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, that fourth place is more of a toss-up. It depends on who's going to really push for it. Me, personally, I have the Arizona Coyotes clinching that fourth spot. I don't know how you, Dan, or you, Mike, feel about who may be that fourth team, or if there might be two surprise teams and we see Vegas or St. Louis stumble. But I highly doubt seeing Vegas or St. Louis stumble enough to miss the playoffs.
I don't really see.
It's funny you mentioned that. I actually have the Minnesota Wild as, fourth right there for me. But I think one of the sneakier teams is actually going to be the Anaheim Ducks. I think they still have really solid defense. They have a good goaltender in John Gibson. And, you know, their future is looking pretty bright, too, with Trevor Zegras coming their way if he's not already.
Yeah, Trevor Zegras was MVP of the World Junior Championships.
Mm-hmm. So I could really see them maybe pushing into that fourth spot and maybe giving the Wild kind of a run for their money. But I think top four, you know, in my mind, it's going to be Wild, Blues, us, Vegas. You know what I mean? Us, you know, in Vegas going back and forth with the top spot. So,
three representatives out of the. What we know as the Central Division with the Wild, Blues, and the Avs, and then a single representative in the Vegas Golden Knights, who have been, I believe, playoff contenders since their expansion draft year.
They're not very
almost won the whole thing.
Yeah.
Their first year.
Yeah. You know, they've built something pretty solid down in Vegas. So let's move on to more of the happier news. And that was what I call, you know, pun intended and everything, an avalanche of goals in my article I wrote yesterday that came out today on Rocky Mountain Sports, RockyMountainSR.com. 8-0 was the final score. Philip Grubauer saw only 21 shots in net. And, you know, I was kind of worried with that first period. That first period might kind of, you know, 0-0, you know, back and forth, a lot of back and forth. You spoke to Brandon Saad, not really gelling yet with the team. He did have a solid breakaway chance, but wasn't able to put the puck in the net. You know, a 0-0 game after one against a team like St. Louis Blues. What goes through your mind as the Avalanche enter that first intermission last night?
I think it's okay. We still need to breathe. It's still an even game. You're not playing catch-up. Now, you do need to, I would say, be a little bit more physical. Maybe you get to that mentality, hey, St. Louis is known to be a bigger team. They're known to kind of bully their way around a little bit. They obviously picked up, who's the guy from, Torrey Krug. Yeah, from
Boston.
From Boston, right. You know, obviously Torrey Krug, not really known as like a power hitter. But he also has the experience to kind of move the puck around, especially in the power play. Hey, maybe that's hey, let's make sure we stay out of the box tonight, okay? We don't want to see that power play unit from the St. Louis Blues, okay? We don't want to see that very often. But
yeah, definitely devastating Ryan O'Reilly and Perron. And now with the addition of Mike Hoffman there, you know, it's definitely a formidable adversary, especially with their size. You know, with the Avs, you know, they're not exactly like the biggest team, but... You know, I guarantee after that first period, they were sitting there and they were like, let's use our speed against these guys. That's what we are made for. That's what we are built on. And that's what will wear these guys down. You know, let's just keep going. We've already felt this before last night or last game. And, you know, let's just keep pumping through, I think.
I absolutely agree. Mike, you spoke on it just a moment ago. You know, Avalanche aren't really known for being that power-hitting type team. But I did see some plays that really gave me some hope as to the Avalanche kind of building on that philosophy with some of their speed guys. I saw Cale Makar throw a number of hits last night in that game. I saw Nathan MacKinnon kind of shove some people off as he was skating into zones. There were probably a couple calls that MacKinnon could have drawn in that game as far as penalties. But, I mean, and we'll dive into the power plays of the Avalanche last night as they tied a franchise record of five power play goals.
Yeah, they're so good power play.
Some phenomenal power play moves right there. And, you know, I think I even saw Mikko Rantanen kind of like back check a guy in the offensive zone and throw him on his butt. So, you know, the Avalanche are built on speed, but I think Coach Bednar and the coaching staff have really come to this team and was like, we know you guys got the speed. We want to see some of that grit, some of that muscle as well.
That power, right.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people, you know, kind of throwing that out there towards the Avs. You know, they're like, oh, we got rid of Zadorov. Now we don't have any more, you know, grit. And it's like, well, you know what, man? We got Nazem Kadri. We got, you know, Big Nuke on the, you know, on the third line. We got.
Yeah, you got Matty Calvert's back.
Matt Calvert, man. What else can you say, bro?
Matt Calvert, yeah.
Matt Calvert's going to go up against anybody.
And I really think that. You know, shows, even with the speed, and that just makes us that much more deadly.
Yeah, absolutely. So, first period set aside, 0-0 after that. We enter the second period last night. It's, you know, and I think it didn't take long for the Avalanche to set a tone in the second period. As I have written down, .403 of the second period was Landeskog's goal, his 199th goal. And what a, you know, kind of an odd bounce that went in the Avalanche favor with MacKinnon behind the net. But Landeskog's wide open and that puck goes in. Low glove side on Jordan Binnington, put the Avs up 1-0. Is this what we expect from Gabriel Landeskog this season? Do we expect him to continue to play this well? Because I believe he is entering end of a contract. You know, does he, is he playing for a contract? I he said he wants to be here long term.
Oh, and I think he will. Honestly, I think he will be here long term, and I think they're talking about it right now, and I really think that Landeskog could really keep up this this elite play that he's got going on for at least in another couple of years. You know, especially with his leadership qualities, which is the main thing the Avs were looking at him before they drafted him. He hit his 200 goal mark last night. You know, Mikko Rantanen hit his 100 goal mark last night. So a couple different milestones for the young Avs. And I really think that Landeskog and the Avs will definitely get a contract done probably before.
I mean, yeah, it's a huge milestone for both Gabriel Landeskog and Mikko Rantanen. Gabriel Landeskog becomes only the second player in his draft class to break that 200 goal mark. The only person he's trailing is Nikita Kucherov, who for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he's out this season. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, you look at what Nikita Kucherov's done in Tampa Bay. Yeah. Kucherov's done a lot in Tampa Bay, and, you know, they gave him a huge contract. So, you know, Landeskog's been kind of keeping that pace with him. So I expect with Landeskog's interest in staying here, he might take one of those team-friendly type long-term deals to try and keep this core intact.
Kind of the Sidney Crosby type move.
Yeah.
Where you take the, you know, the sweetener. Sweetener deal that kind of helps keep everybody on the same team so you can win some cups.
Yep.
Make that dynasty.
Absolutely. So I took notes throughout the game last night. Makar had one of those big hits, throwing the body around shortly after Landeskog's first goal. And then we start seeing some power play stuff going on for the Avs. St. Louis Blues, I don't think the coaching staff was happy with the number of penalties they took last night. I mean, the Avs scored on five of those penalties. And I'm pretty sure I counted at least eight penalties or eight power play opportunities for the Avs last night. But they were well over 50% on the power play last night, putting up five power play goals, which ties a franchise record that was set back in February 20th of 2018. I forget who they played that game, but I mean, you get five power play goals in one game, you're doing something right.
It's a good night. It's a good night all around, man.
Oh, definitely. And I'll tell you what, like when you have the addition of Devontae's to who is himself a power play specialist, and you put him next to Sammy Girard, who I think even in the last game the Avs played, terrible. I thought he was their best player last game, and he's just impressed me so far, and I think that he's going to take his game to another level, and so that makes our power play, both of them, both sets, just so dangerous, so no one needs to be taking penalties against the Avs, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely interesting to see how well how lethal the Avs can be on the power play, and their penalty kill for that matter looked pretty solid last night as well. You know, you saw players playing a little more close to the body when it came to pushing the puck out and trying to get it out of their zone and everything, and a little more aggressive. I know that Thursday they did a morning skate with the team and coaches and everything, and they're like, hey, look, We can't be soft on defense. We have to kind of stick it to them when we can and be smart about it. You know, don't play so aggressive that you're pulling yourself out of position, but aggressive enough that they're going to have a hard time setting up their scheme, their idea to put that puck in the back of the net.
Absolutely. I think a lot of that comes from Calvert, I think, was on a lot of the penalty kills, wasn't he, last night?
I believe Calvert is on one of the penalty kills, yeah. Usually it's Calvert, Confer, and I think Nichushkin. You know, those are the shorthand specialists,
right,
for the Avalanche. And Confer had a great opportunity on a shorthand goal, or a potential for a shorthand goal, and I think the puck rolled on him, and he didn't get quite a clean shot off. So,
Well, as we know, JT Compher's a shorthanded specialist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clutch performer.
Well, I think Mike was more referring to the JT Compher against the Coyotes, you know, putting up two shorthand goals on one, you know, one penalty kill.
Oh yeah.
From a couple seasons ago. You know, goal number 200 for Gabriel Landeskog, it couldn't have been a cleaner, you know, more perfect chemistry team chemistry type play. Yeah, Mikko Rantanen skating along the backside, you know, St. Louis Blues player all over him, and you had Landeskog just kind of sitting at the goal line to the left of Bennington, and he gets the backhand feed and just slides it underneath the pads of Bennington for goal number 200. And the other side of it is Mikko Rantanen's 100th goal of the season was this beautiful, like, no-look pass from Cale Makar after Nazem Kadri fed him with a pass out of the top corner in a battle with some Blues players. And Rantanen was just ready for that puck for a good two and a half, three seconds before he got it. Dan, you get a chance to catch some of those highlights?
Oh, definitely. That was a beautiful, beautiful one-time shot by Mikko. And the pass, I think, was almost better because Cale Makar kind of did this little, like, move to do that. And
his little shimmy?
It just was...
And we got, and you got to give credit where credit's due. A lot of this, a lot of these open lanes, a lot of these open looks, and this, you know, the ability of Cale Makar to stare down a goalie or Rantanen to be wide open, just ready for the one-time shot, goes back to Nathan MacKinnon and his ability to skate into his zone, draw the attention of multiple players, and, you know, just take people's focus off of plays. You saw it several times last night.
Oh yeah, when he gets his motor going, and he is just so unpredictable that most players just sit there dumbfounded and just don't know what to do. They just don't know how to take him. They're like, he could go left, he could go right, he could go through me. It doesn't really matter. Like, I think he just blows people away with his explosiveness, and he can draw the entire play towards him to where most of the attention's on him. So that way, at least other guys open, so that way plays are, you know, he can make individual plays in the tightest spaces, so it helps the team out, and he can get the puck to whoever's, you know, wide open, and it really does make that much of a difference having Nathan MacKinnon on the ice.
It doesn't, I mean, I'm a fan, and I'm still dumbfounded about the way, I mean, I can't even imagine as a defender trying to stare down either Cale or Nathan or whatever, like, all right, I got you, like, shice.
Like, he just disappeared.
Yes.
I was looking at like a reverse like view of Nathan MacKinnon's goal when he just busts through both the defensemen, and I was kind of, you get a kind of a glimpse of their faces like as he decides to explode, and it's kind of an oh shit moment where they're like, oh.
They kind of look at each other and like, the coach isn't going to be happy about this one. So that really sums up kind of what we expect from the Avs last night. I know every game's not going to be an 8-0 blowout, but I think that was the response that fans wanted to see from the Avalanche, especially against a team like the Blues. It really speaks to their ability to overcome and stuff. And I think that's a really good step in the right direction. You don't want to be that team that loses, two, three games in a row. These losing streaks, especially this season with it being only 56 games, can be such a detrimental part to a team potentially missing of playoffs. This is a straight up 56-game push to earn that playoff spot. You're cutting the field in half in each division, except for Canada, because they only have 7 teams. But
it's going to be a constant grind. Every night, I think, should be more of like the way you approach it is, we want to go to the Stanley Cup. We're going to approach every game like as if it's you know, that important. I think they all have that mentality this year, and I think that's what's going to take them all the way through, grinding through this 56-game season, because each game is so important that, you know, they're all three-point nights.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of which, speaking of three, the Avalanche are off for the next 3 days. Today is obviously January 16th when we're recording. We're probably going to release this podcast, move our podcast release up to probably Sundays. Now with the NFL being pretty much done and over, and with the hockey season rocking and rolling, we'll do our recordings Saturdays. We'll release on Sundays after we, you know, I go through and take a look at some things. And just so we can get content out there to you guys as fresh as possible, as soon as possible. These next 3 days are kind of a rarity in the NHL schedule for a lot of teams. You know, the Avs are off 3 days. They don't play again until Tuesday, January 19th, as they open up their series, I believe, against the Los Angeles Kings. Two games against the Kings, and then they had a little southwest for a stop down in Anaheim as they take on the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, as I'd love to call them, you know, even though they're just the Anaheim Ducks now.
Yeah,
so
that was cool.
Let's take a look at these Los Angeles Kings. As we know, the Quentin Byfield, number two overall prospect of the 2020 draft, highest drafted African-American player in NHL history. This is a guy that's been kind of seen as the heir and, you know, the next captain of these Los Angeles Kings once Anze Kopitar hangs up the skates. Checking in on some of the games that the Los Angeles Kings had, as I kind of predicted in one of my articles, a lot of their scoring is coming from their veteran players, you know, Dustin Brown, Jeff Slater, Anze Kopitar, these type of characters. I'm not seeing a lot of names pop up from their younger core. And a lot of us are familiar with their current GM, Rob Blake. Rob Blake has built up a pretty wealthy amount of elite prospects for this Los Angeles Kings team. Dan, what is your take on the Los Angeles Kings, our next opponent?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think we're a little lucky. I think we dodged a little bit of a bullet. I wasn't like tremendously impressed with Byfield in the World Junior Tournament, although he did have a 7-point game, which I found to be ridiculous, which he does have those bursts, and he does have that skill. I think we got a little lucky, though, because they did send him down to their minor league team, their AHL affiliate. So he won't be with them, and I don't think Alex Turcotte will be there either. So all we have is their grizzled veterans this time around. I know they're kind of giving the Wild a hard time in their battle with the Wild these last two games. And the Wild came out on top in overtime with their new guy, Kirill Kaprizov. Pardon me. It's a mouthful, but it seems like the Kings kind of gave the Wild a little bit of a hard time, so I expect the Kings to come out kind of with a physical presence. You know, I don't exactly see them being dominating by any means, but it can definitely, they're a physical, big team. They still have people like Drew Doughty, Jeff Carter, Jonathan Quick, in my opinion, is, you know, on the downward slope, but he's still a pretty good goaltender. He can definitely put up some really good saves and really important nights for the Kings. So I could see it kind of being, you know, something they shouldn't take lightly, even though, you know, they weren't obviously very good last year and they drafted second overall and whatnot. But I think that they're going to be one of those teams that kind of gets in the way of you trying to get points.
A spoiler team of sorts.
Yeah, yeah.
So it surprises me that they sent... I can understand sending Quentin Byfield down if the Philly's not quite ready. He was just drafted in the 2020 draft. Alex Turcotte is a bit of a surprise to me for them to send him down, considering, you know, the amount of youth talent around this team. You know, they've got a lot of high draft picks because they've been fairly bad, or they've traded and moved up a little bit here and there. But as you said, Dan, this is a team that could probably throw a wrench into the system for a lot of these playoff caliber type teams. They're really a team that is playing with nothing to lose. This is more of a developmental year for them as far as, building that team chemistry and seeing what players gel and what players don't, and can really understand their scheme and the plan that they have in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and also I think they did add a little bit of speed this offseason by, recently signing Andreas Athanasiou. So
yeah, out of Edmonton.
He did score a goal the other day, and he is very, very fast. So he can keep up with pretty much everybody on the ice. So I'd be looking at him to be somewhat of a threat. They do have some other young guns that can produce. So I think, yeah, like you were saying, they can definitely throw a wrench into a lot of teams' plans.
Mike, I see you over there scrambling through your phone doing some research. What you got, man?
I'm more along the lines, kind of just looking at that Friday game, just the 8-0, kind of just to see what kind of, obviously it was a big game. What we said, you said 11 points through.
Yeah, 11 players scoring points in the game for the Avalanche on Friday. Seven different players, 8 goals.
Right. No, I was just kind of curious just to see how, specifically Ryan Graves, a little off topic, but just see how he was setting the bar, essentially.
Yeah, big defenseman for the Colorado Avalanche, was led the NHL last year in plus minus at 40 for the season. What do you got for us?
Well, so out of the two games played, he has one assist, one, obviously just totaling 1 point, and a minus two and a plus minus. So he's obviously, this is a small, really, really small sample.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, through the 56
two games.
Exactly. 56 game season and only two games in. Oh, he's a minus two. Oh, he's not that great of a player. Like, it's nothing to panic about. Again, I was just curious. Something also that I was looking up was Matt Calvert. Okay, he's only gotten one shot throughout both of those games.
Yeah, he's more or less flying around the ice trying to pick fights.
Right. And providing the heart to block the shots. Last night he really impressed me. Brandon Saad, again, only one shot through those two games. A combination of, I think, 27 minutes on ice, and he's got a minus four. So, obviously, again, we talked about Brandon Saad trying to find his groove.
So, a minus four, which would have meant he was on ice for all four of St. Louis's goals on Wednesday night. That's rough.
Yeah.
That really plays a bit on a player's, mental state.
Right. So, now I'm kind of just wondering how those players might, or how Bednar might, I don't know,
kind coach them up.
Yeah, like, hey, we're playing the Kings. The Kings are the ones who beat us in that stadium series last year. We know you weren't around, but
this, we want revenge.
We kind of need something. So yeah, if you could, put on the Jets, essentially, and kind of just like, hey, so these Kings are coming up. We want to thrash them. Let's get a little more out of you. All right, I'll put you on ice as much as I need to, but you need to show me something.
I will say,
yeah, especially with this up and coming young talent that we have already, it's, people are kind of jumping at the chance to take your job now. And so, if Brandon Saad does want to resign with us, in the offseason, he's gonna have to show it.
He's got to show it.
Two games in, so it's hard for me to even say that. But, I think he'll get out of this funk. He's been a 20 plus goal scorer for his entire career. He's won two Stanley Cups with Chicago, or three, I can't remember.
If Mike could give you a crisp high five through a phone, he would right now.
Oh, high five.
So,
but I think Brandon Saad will eventually kind of find his groove, and once he does, I think, man, this Avs team is just going to be that much more hard to stop, because you already got Burakovsky, who's leading the team right now in points, and him and McKinnon are tied, but.
And No, Berkey only had one goal last night, and he had a goal on the first night, so he's only got 2 points. McCarr and McKinnon both got 3 points last night.
Okay.
Berkey, I think, has a goal and 2 assists.
I don't think he got any assists last night. I'm not 100% sure on that. I may have gotten one of my stats wrong. But I did go through and try and do a tally mark of everybody who scored a goal last night. And me being a goalie player myself, I have to say, I am very, very happy that Philip Grubauer got his second career point last night on an assist on Andre Burakovsky's goal.
Grubauer assist. I love that. I love that everybody got involved, including the goalie.
Grubauer was even quoted as saying, he was like, you know, if this team wants to score, they need to give me the puck. And it just goes to show that humor that you find that a lot of fans don't get to see on the ice because it's all business. But this is one of those teams, like, if you see them behind the ice, if if you're lucky enough to tune into the Altitude Channel and see some of the behind-the-ice features that they do with the Avalanche, this is a team that really gels and really has a lot of fun off ice and in practice. And, you know, they're cracking jokes during interviews and Zoom calls and everything. I mean, Burakovsky called out Belmar about playing on Lake Tahoe.
Broke his heart.
He broke my heart, man. But,
yeah, I'll tell you what. And you know what? I think that was another thing. That happened was, you know, we got the three-headed monster back, and I think that got everybody kind of in sync again.
Yeah, I know, Landeskog, McKinnon, and Rantanen, but I flipped it around with my anagram of them for LRM, long-range missile. I mean, this team, you know, that top line, they've got the length, just the speed, and like when they do score, it's like a missile going off. It's just that explosive. It really boosts the team up, and if they get going, then they're good. That top line had 7 points last night. 7 points, right. In that game.
Three-headed monster returns.
It's just great, and I see Bednar probably running with that line a lot more than what he was planning on doing. I mean, they're just that good together.
I understand, Landeskog with Sod and Condrey definitely looks good on paper with Burakovsky on the top line, but I think with the flip-flop, I really think that, Condrey and Burakovsky have some chemistry, and I think that I really think as long as that top line is jarring and all the leaders are going, Nathan McKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, both, all of them going at the same time kind of jogs the rest of the team like a domino effect.
Well, so. Not only that, but it might be one of those things like McKinnon skates adventures, like, I got my goal, where's yours? kind of throw the challenge out to the rest of the team. And everybody kind of responds. It gets a little bit more of that fire in their belly to go out there and perform just as well as McKinnon does.
And go have fun, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I guarantee you ask every single Avalanche player who played last night, hey, man, did you have fun? Hell yeah, I had some fun. like 8-0. Who's not having fun aside from the other team?
Right. I'll tell you what, Blues fans were super salty today.
Oh, man, I bet. I think it was the group page, I Love the Colorado Avalanche, took the Twisted Tea meme and, like, flip that around.
I put one out on my on the Colorado Avalanche Society last night with the frozen guy or whatever.
He's oh like, yeah, the guy, blowout. The guy in the cabin. Yoo-hoo! Big summer blowout.
Big summer blowout.
St. Louis Blues logo. I shared that to a couple of other groups. I had to. I'm like, this is just too good.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
It absolutely entertaining. So yeah. The Avs, their next 6 games are all against California teams. They're on the road for 4 games, 2 against the Los Angeles Kings, 2 against the Anaheim Ducks, and then we come back and we host a 2-game series against the San Jose Sharks. All those teams, according to the NHL.com writers and everything, are slotted towards the bottom of the West Division. I believe it's called the Honda West Division, if we're being technically correct with the terminology.
All the advertisement stuff.
Yeah. All the advertisements.
Which,
if people didn't catch it during the games, the Avalanche are running with the Ball Core logo on their helmets. You know, it's a way to boost revenue. It kind of signals to me the possibility of fans not being in attendance at all this season with the way they have arenas set up right now.
Yeah, I did see some today. I saw some fans while I was watching San Jose play Arizona Coyotes. Arizona Coyotes.
Are they playing in Arizona?
Yeah, they were in Arizona.
I was going to say, God forbid they're playing in California.
Yeah, they ain't going to let that happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I saw a few fans. I know Florida's allowed to do it. Texas is allowed to do it.
Yeah, some arenas are, some arenas aren't. It's definitely going to be interesting. The question was brought up to me, you know, by another person that follows us on Rocky Mountain Sports Report, you know, hey, do you see the Avs letting, you know, fans attend games, you know, because they were trying to plan a birthday for one of their kids or whatever. And I told them the same thing I'll say now. My sources, because I was a season ticket holder the last two seasons, I gave up my season tickets this year, partly because of COVID, partly because I had other personal things going on. I had a ticket rep tell me personally, like, if they did allow fans into the in, they would start with their season ticket holders.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure with that push in mind, you know, people want to buy up season tickets so they have first opportunity to get into the games. And depending on the number of seats they allow, even that might come down to a lottery system with their with the season ticket holders who are fans. And then the general, you know, general admission would probably be just as limited, if not more. And again, based on a lottery system, you know, first come, first serve. When we call your number, you have 5 minutes, or we give your tickets to somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's definitely an interesting thing, but I will tell fans, you know, hang in there, support the guys, however you want to support them. Follow them on their Instagram pages, follow them on their Twitter handles, whatever it is. I know they're putting out content there. They love to hear from, you know, from fans, and please do so safely. I understand, you know, people are divided on how COVID is affecting us all, but our players want to be safe. They want to be healthy. They want to give us this sport that we all know and love, and they want us to, you know, have something enjoyable to watch when everything else around the world is just, you know, quite a little uncertain.
And I definitely agree with that. And, you know, you got people like you, and you got other people out there that make content and kind of try to, you know, as best, you know, give you close to the game as humanly possible.
We do what we can as much as we can. In additional news, and then we'll start wrapping it up, the Avalanche made some roster moves today. Dan, I think you shared it to your Colorado Avalanche Society site, right?
I did, yes.
You wanna run us through that real quick?
Yeah, so today the Avalanche ended up sending Logan O'Connor and Shane Bowers back down to the Eagles, which then placed Connor Timmins and Bowen Byram in their taxi squad with the return of Eric Johnson. So a lot of interesting things are afoot, I think. You know, you think of it a different way, I think of it a different way. Some people out there want to see Byram play, and I'm kind of in that boat. I think that they're going to give him a chance, but I think they're going to play Eric Johnson here soon. I think it's really cool that they got Bowen Byram on that taxi squad, giving him a chance, I think.
Yeah. I will say, for me, I know Mike and I talked about it on a podcast maybe a couple episodes ago.
I think it was a couple,
We were under the impression that the WHL was going to start their season relatively soon compared to what the NHL was doing, and the AHL was going to start up sometime in probably February. For those of you that don't know, Bowen Byram was playing with the Vancouver Giants out of the WHL, and when he was drafted by the Avs, his contract basically stated that if he did not make the active roster for the Avalanche, then he would have to go play with the Vancouver Giants. They couldn't send him to the Colorado Eagles. I think it was just the way the contract was written, and part of it had to do with his age when he first got drafted. Bowen Byram is now 19 years old, and I think does fall within the age category, so he could play with the Eagles. But I think his contract still states that unless he makes the player's active roster, which includes the taxi squad, he would have to go play for the Vancouver Giants. The WHL has not yet set a firm date on if they were going to be able to return to do a return to play. They have to go through the same process that the NHL went through with getting clearances by the provinces and territories in order to have play happen.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm so sorry. But there's more about the call-ups and whatnot. There's more to that, actually. So the Colorado Avalanche the Colorado Eagles actually let Luca Berzan, what's the other guy? Jean-Luc Foudy and Sasha Mutala come try out.
They did extend ATOs to a number of WHL hockey players to come try out with the Eagles. I think this is another step by the WHL to try and offer some of their players the opportunity to play hockey and stay in hockey shape by auditioning and possibly trying out with some AHL teams. You got to understand, all 31 teams in the NHL have a taxi squad, which takes up, I believe, 6 players from the AHL roster. Basically, calls them up as a squad that travels with the team, practices with the team, and basically serves as like additional support for the active roster. And the taxi squad teams are there in case of a COVID-19 type emergency. So, of course, if those players are moving up from the AHL rosters, there's going to be openings at the AHL level. So you're seeing some of the WHL players come and get invited in to at least training camps and hopefully to make those AHL rosters. Very gracious of all the organizations and bodies of hockey with contracts and everything being very lenient with the contract, with the specific contract details in order to let these young athletes play and compete in the sport that they love. But yes, thank you for bringing up that up, Dan. I was going to bring that up, that they did extend some offers to some other athletes.
Yeah, good to see some of the Avs draft picks potentially moving up in the world. That's always exciting. It's nice to see, Connor Timmins kind of almost graduate at this point. You know, he's pretty much NHL ready. It's cool to see the potential of Bowen Byram getting a chance at the NHL level. And, who knows, he may just Cale Makar it and, blow us all away. And, then they have, a very good problem on their hands. So
it's a good problem to have, right?
It's a good problem to have, defensive depth. Which brings up the question that we're all facing this offseason, or this season. I can't say offseason because we're not there yet.
Right.
But with this season in particular, Connor Timmins did get the start with the Avalanche in the first 2 games to fill the position of Eric Johnson, who was out with COVID, had tested positive for COVID-19 before training camp started and was on quarantine. Today, January 16th, was his day for return. So they did assign him to the Colorado Avalanche. He's with the team. I believe they travel Monday to Arizona, if not late Sunday. And then he'll be out there on the ice. They reassigned Connor Timmins to the practice squad just to have him there in case of another situation like this. Bowen Byram, as you said, Dan, got the call up to from the Eagles, which was a paper transaction because he still hadn't cleared his quarantine process and his return from the World Junior Championships. and is now sitting on the practice squad now that he's eligible. And as you pointed out, Dan, this is where you and I differ. You're one of the ones saying you're ready to see Bowen Byram in the uniform and playing. And I, on the other hand, I personally say save a year of his ELC contract for financial purposes. You have a lot of other contracts that need to be addressed. And only play him when absolutely necessary. I think he's there as a safety valve. But the other big issue I see is who do you move away from this team in order to free up a spot for Byram if he is to play full time? As we know, Cale Makar is not going anywhere. You just signed Devin Toews to a 4-year deal for an average of $4.1 million, and you've got Ryan Graves, who just signed a new contract. You've got Eric Johnson and a no-move clause on his contract. Ian Coles, this is his last year, so he's a potential trade bait. But I see him as being a key veteran defensive presence. So, and I wouldn't want to move him. Ian Cole did put up numbers similar last year to the numbers he had with his Stanley Cup when in Pittsburgh. So the odd man out, in my opinion, is Sam Girard.
Interesting. Very interesting way to look at it. Like you do say, I do differ with you on this, only just because, man, because what if, just what if, like, you know, Cale Makar came in pretty seamlessly. I actually don't anticipate that for Bowen Byram, but if he does come in seamlessly and performs, because then what do you do? Then you kind of have to make that tough decision, because you have Sam Girard locked up for 5 years, or is it, it's $5 million for 7 years, sorry. You got Devin Toews, you got Cale Makar, and then you got Ian Cole, Ryan Graves. So it's going to have to be one of those two, because obviously Eric Johnson with his no trade clause is going to throw a wrench into anything with that, and most people don't even want to see UJ go. You know, it's hard to say, like, whether he stays with the team or not. I think that answer comes here in the next year or two for EJ. But as far as, like, you know, Ian Cole's expiring contract, I think he ultimately would be the one to get traded out to make room for Bowen Byram.
An interesting take as well. My worry is if you're losing if you're losing a veteran presence like Ian Cole, you put a lot more pressure on somebody like Eric Johnson as the veteran voice of, you know, and leadership in that defensive locker room. He does wear an A on his chest for a reason, Eric Johnson does, but I still feel like Ian Cole is a pivotal piece of the veteran leadership on the makeup of this team. So it'll definitely be interesting.
Mike, Ian Cole.
Yeah.
He is something you definitely want to have going through the playoffs. Like, yeah. I 1000% agree with you on that. It's just going to be a really tough call, I think, if Bowen Byram forces the Avalanche to make
Mike, you might, you know, we've talked about this before. You know, Sam Girard came over in the Matt Duchene trade. You know, it's just an additional piece from the Nashville Predators, and it seems like he just wasn't a fit there. And Girard's actually blended in pretty well and been a pivotal piece for the Avalanche. You know, penalty kills when he's out there, and, you know, just that gritty. He's that third pairing gritty line that matches well with the Calvert line. Just playing on my perspective of Sam Girard being that odd person out, does Joe Sakic work some more magic?
Does he fleece somebody? That's what I'm about to tell you. Like, that's what I was about to say. Does Joe Sakic fleece another team? Because any of our defensemen would be within, you know, the top four of any team.
I mean, so. I don't know that Joe. Okay, let me put it this way. We all know that Joe can fleece any team that he wants. I mean, whatever team you give him, a team, he'll make a deal happen. That's a given. There's no question or contest there. But I mean, Honestly, man, kind of going off of what Scott, what you said, I don't see anybody else being expendable, I suppose, as you put it, as expendable as Sam Girard. If you do make that call up to Bowen Byram and him coming up and putting, you know, throwing him in the fire and seeing what he does, and maybe he could be another Cale Makar. I mean, maybe he could take a first shot on his first NHL shift and score his first goal in the NHL playoffs. I mean, maybe. But at the same time, I think Girard is, to me, in the chain link fence that we have in defense, if you want to call it that, I see Girard as being that weak link. Specifically, he's too damn small. He is too damn small. He gets pushed off when he does, specifically in the defensive end. I'm not talking offensive, because we've all seen him juke skaters out of their skates and leave them on the ice and all this other stuff. Leave
the whirlwind spin.
Exactly. Yeah. We've seen that happen. However, in the defensive end, whenever it goes into the corner and Girard's that first person, he gets pushed off the puck so easily. And it's not his fault. Okay. It's just too damn small.
I think we're starting to turn Dan to our side.
you're thinking wrong there, buddy. But I can definitely... Sam Girard is very small, and I have to agree with you on that. I don't want to agree with you on that, but I have to agree with you on that, because I definitely noticed it as well.
Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to start wrapping it up as we're reaching our hour for our episode this week. Give us some thought. Give us your comments on what you think on Bowen Byram and him possibly coming in. Who does he replace? How did the Avalanche handle that situation? And as I said, just Joe Sakic work some more of his magic and kind of pull the rug from under another team and making everything happen. As always, you can find us here on anchor.fm, which is the platform that we use to record our episodes. Or if you are a Spotify user like myself, you just Google us, Rocky Mountain Sports Report. You'll find the Avalanche information, and you just click on the episode you want to listen to. This is our third episode of the 2021 year, so this is our second season, third episode. Even though our first season was very short with only two episodes, potentially three if you break it down the right way. Dan, thank you very much for joining us today. I really enjoyed having you on, man.
Likewise, thanks for having me, man. It was really my pleasure. And give me a like and follow over there at the Colorado Avalanche Society. Make sure you say hi to me, peeps.
Absolutely. Go check him out on Colorado Avalanche Society on Facebook. He also has a YouTube page, does some great work with Avalanche highlights and some music. It makes it match up very well. Really enjoyable hype video for the 21 season on there. Please go check them out. And with that, we're going to say our goodbyes. We'll get this podcast up to you guys out bright and early, and we will check in with you next Saturday as we cover the games from the week. We got two games against LA, and I think we might actually be recording during a game. I think they play Anaheim next Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably be doing some recording while watching the game at the same time. So forgive us if we all scream and shout while the game's going on. Again, my name is Scott Cole here with Mike Herschel and Dan Slate. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys on the other side.
Go Avs!
Go Avs!